Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 535 for comics originally released on November 8th, 2017. Now, starting us off in DC is Detective Comics number 968. Now, this is the final part of A Lonely Place of Living, and the title is a callback to A Lonely Place of Dying, which was a Hallmark story for the Batman stuff. And this is touching on what happened to Tim Drake about a year ago now, I guess, was when they had kind of taken him off stage and whatnot, and the storylines brought him back.
Has it been a year? Wow.
I'm thinking so. I could be wrong on that. It's been a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not a full year, but at least better part of a year. I don't recall off the top of my head exactly how long it's been, but I thought it was a pretty big move for them to take Red Robin and appear to kill him off. Play fair enough that we knew that he would be back at some point. I don't know if they did that immediately or shortly thereafter. I really enjoyed the story a lot, but it pushed a lot of kind of the buttons that work for me of, you know, I liked the Tim Drake character. We had all the Robins here. It was a pretty good Batman story. The characters from Detective here were well used. If, you know, they were not at the forefront because, I mean, we've got like another half dozen characters involved here, making for a little bit of a crowded issue, but it was fun. The initial solicit for the first part had me expecting, and mistakenly so, I guess, other escapees from Oz's prison that might, I don't know, form a new team that this Red Robin would lead, potentially under even a different alias or something. Not the direction they went, which is fine. A little bit of a shame, but, you know, okay, fine. Tim did bring back a threat that was, I felt, a serious threat to the Batman family. That gets resolved in this issue. And this is one of the storylines going on, the other one being the Oz Effect over in Action Comics, that's kind of moving forward the bigger picture of the meta-arc, if you will, for Rebirth in the DC Universe. And I really think it's been kind of quietly done, in so much as I think the Oz Effect is getting a lot more buzz and of a spotlight than this is, you know, the lenticular covers and whatnot. But I felt this had a bit of an epic feeling to it. It felt like a major kind of a point in the happenings of Gotham and the Batman family. And like I said, it worked really well for me. You read the whole thing, you've been reading Detective the whole time. Where are you at on this?
Yeah, I've been reading Detective the whole time. I haven't been loving it. So when this story arc really I thought was a lot stronger than some of the previous work. And, you know, The Lonely Place of Dying was one of the early comics that I remember being excited about a long time ago and struggling to find the issues off the rack because they were in such hot demand. And I think I had to get second or third prints or wait for a trade or something back then. So it was a really big deal. So, mm-hmm. It was kind of a cool bookend for me to kind of see how this goes. I think the earlier issues in this arc were a little stronger than this closure, and but this was good, and it didn't end as well as I would have hoped. I would hope to just be, you know, just a roller coaster ride right to the end, and I felt this was a little meandering, I guess. I didn't like this last issue quite as much, but it was still good, and it's great art. It's a fun story. It's one of the stronger detective storylines that I've read, in my opinion, since this Rebirth launch, and pretty good stuff. So it's if you're going to give someone an example of detective, this would be a good arc, I think, to give them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, if you know, you're a fan of Tim Drake, obviously you've been reading this. It, I think, showcased the character really well in a number of ways. The art, I agree, was very solid and great. There are a few places where I really would have appreciated having somebody of the kind of uber detail art style. Because there were a couple of places, it was clear what was going on, but it's like, oh, I guess that one in the background's Red Hood or whatever, just because they'll do some long shots or whatever.
That is challenging sometimes.
It is. And again, this artist, Alvaro Martinez, did a fantastic job. But this is the kind of story that if they had had like a Phil Jimenez or I'd love for it to have been a George Perez thing, but I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately. But somebody that's just so almost obsessive about detail, this could have just really been amazing on the art versus just exceptionally well done. But that's splitting hairs there, I think, a little.
Now, help me from a continuity standpoint. Are they referencing some of the things? They don't acknowledge any of the things that are going on in Metal. None of the same landmarks, correct, during this story arc?
I'm not sure when this takes place versus Metal. One would think because of Tim not being referenced in there that this happens after, but it's unclear.
Okay.
This is one of those cases where I believe they referenced Hypertime and would make sense because this arguably is an example of Hypertime. That was the writing device, we'll say, to kind of explain away things like, you've got Metal going on with no Tim Drake, so when does that happen? You've got this happening with no reference to Metal, so are they both happening at the same time? Are they not? How does that dovetail? And the explanation is a wave of the hand in Hypertime.
Okay. Because comics.
Because gotcha. Comics. It would have been nice if the continuity between the titles and what's going on was a little bit tighter, but it's not like this is a meta arc involved story. Oh wait, it is, just like Metal is. So I don't know. It's a little frustrating, but like I said, it was a fun read. It was a good story. I'm willing to play a little fast and loose on that kind of stuff. What got me was to your point of the resolutions being a little, not to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to go with a little lackluster. There were a few things there that kind of took me aback a little bit.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Particularly when we had this great sort of splash page of Batman and the various Robins coming in fighter jets or whatever, and then apparently hovering. I'm like, wait, how does that panel play out? How does that work again? I don't think physics works quite that way. And then the resolution there on the last 2-3 pages, I liked and was a little frustrated by because it's like, oh, and now it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a story that really raised a number of questions in my mind. There are references to pre-Flashpoint continuity in one or two of the earlier parts of this. And it begs the question as to, does that timeline still exist intact somewhere? Does it not? What's going on? I really think that the Metal aside, the multiverse, well, even with Metal, the multiverse is something they haven't really leveraged all of that well recently. And even with the Metal stuff, they're doing the dark multiverse versus the other 52 in the regular multiverse.
Yes.
So there's a lot more storylines they could pick up. This really reminded me of older Tim Drake storylines, particularly the pre-Flashpoint stuff, where I thought the character was just exceptionally well used, be it between the Titans titles and just his own series that went on for quite some time. This is a character that could definitely lead his own book, whether he gets the chance to or not. I don't know. It's a little unclear from here where they're going to take the character. But I enjoyed the read. It was fun.
Well, there have been some lines in here, you know, in this issue in particular. There was one about, I don't know how you'll ever be able to forgive Damian for what he does to little John.
The poor Kent boy.
The poor Kent boy.
Doesn't say John.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Okay. But I wonder how much weight that line and some other lines really have. You know, it's Tinian's line. It's in theory, it's clearing editorial. So the Bat editorial department signs off on it. I don't know if that has any relevance over into the Super family of books, or is this just a throwaway line to be provocative, or is this actually going to drive something?
Time will tell. We'll find out if that or a few of the other things really come to pass, because there's a few.
Yeah.
Wait until there's this happens.
Yeah. about what why he was even there and what drove Batman's death and his being replaced by him and how that came to be. All that stuff is really interesting. I just wonder if it's ever going to be touched on again.
I wonder if it has been touched on before, because we've seen Batman of the future in various stories before. Yeah.
Yep.
And not all of them from the New 52 Rebirth continuity. And there are strong clues, if not flat out facts, that indicate this character that is making some of these proclamations of wait until this happens, because this was one of the other people who was imprisoned, I guess, with Oz, which in and of itself makes my brain hurt a little bit. Because we only, I think, have four prisoners of Oz's. Tim, the foe he brings back here, Mixoplick, and I think it was a Doomsday. But the foe that comes back here, and I don't want to spoil who it is, because I think it's a fun reveal and you should read the story. But I think he's from a different timeline. So the things that this character is saying will happen may not come to pass in this reality. It's a little mind-boggling, and it goes back to, even though DC has, I think, a more stable timeline than a lot of people give it credit for, they did an in-story reboot with Crisis on Infinite Earths, a major retooling retcon with Zero Hour. We'll ignore the Legion of Superheroes stuff, because that's 1,000 years hence. And then a full-on hard reboot with the New 52, with new origins, new backstories, and everything, to the point of it seems like a different parallel world. They've muddled up their continuity enough that it does make me kind of shake my head. It's like, well, which version of this series of events or whatnot may have happened, may not have happened. It just gets kind of confusing at times, to be honest.
It gets challenging. Sometimes for me, it just doesn't make enough sense. And, it's easier for me to kind of not worry about it. And, sometimes I just can't put it together as far as how it all fits together and if it's all in this world or another world. So sometimes it can be a challenge, and I don't think I'm alone.
No. Again, your point of where does this take place versus Metal is a fair point. And on the one hand, does that impact the enjoyability of this story or Dark Knight's Metal? Not really. But on the other hand, if you're telling me they're both happening and I can't even do a basic order of events, did A happen before B or B happen before A? And one of the two should have impacted the other with the character either being there or not being there or whatever, that chips away at the stability of the universe. And I think it's one that, because there have been so many incarnations of some of these characters and so many almost competing backstories, continuities, timelines, whatever you want to call it, the continuity and believability of these stories is inherently a bit more brittle than, say, the Star Wars franchise or some such over in the movies. You know, you've got what you've got, and that's what you've got, you know? Even with Star Trek, there's the movie reboot and the original timeline, but even that's pretty simple and straightforward, because there's just the two. You know, you've got the pre-crisis version of some of these characters, then the Crisis to Flashpoint version, now the New 52 Rebirth version, and not to mention some of the other versions they've scattered across and stuff. It does get a little confusing, and it's something that can't be cleaned up at this point, I fear. The unraveling has been around for literally decades, and most attempts to fix it just sort of make it worse. This, at least, was able to leverage some of the larger backstory, and not, I think, do any particular damage to this continuity that we're dealing with. And again, it involved all the Robins, Batman, the crew at the Belfry with the detective and stuff. So it was fun. Is it one that can make your brain hurt if you think about it too hard? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, I kind of enjoy all the Robins to varying degrees. I have my favorites. And part of me thinks that there's too many. There's too many Robins. And we need a Robin purge of some sort.
I don't think we need a Robin purge, but I think they need to have clearer identities on their own, and they need to step further out from under Batman's shadow. Having almost all of them is problematic. I will admit, I still think that, spoiler, who was Robin for a while, not being Robin, chips away at some of the fairly interesting backstory between Tim and Bruce. Because Tim felt fairly betrayed by some of that, and some of the things that happened around, spoilers, time, as Robin and thereafter and whatnot, really created some interesting, dynamics between various characters in the extended Batman family. But they chose to do away with all of that, so, oh well.
Was that all? Which part was that? When did that get removed?
That was all stuff that got chucked with the New 52 reboot. This is stuff that, spoiler, was Robin for a little bit, became Batgirl for a bit, and was in, along with the Cassandra Cain Batgirl, the Batman Incorporated stuff that kind of sort of bridged the gap or was its storyline continued through the New 52 reboot, even though it really couldn't have, given some of the characters never were who they were at the time.
Well, but, oh, golly. See, in the New 52, though, Tim Drake was Red Robin, but was never
Robin. Was apparently Robin. Never Robin.
But now he is again. He has that history again. So does which he? Part of New 52, which part of the New 52's rewriting of the continuity is kept and which isn't?
Therein lies the rub. Nobody knows.
Okay. So you know when it becomes reintroduced and you're like, oh, okay, I thought that went away, but it didn't. Okay, comics. And you move on.
Sure, we'll go with the move on part, that's the part I have problems with.
That's really the best you can do with some of these, because you think you know, and then it gets tweaked a bit. And I guess that's
the problem with almost everything from a retcon, where you just insert a little retroactive continuity that can have unintended consequences. To a full-on reboot or retooling of a character.
Yeah.
When you reboot the timeline and not all of it gets rebooted, and for New 52, almost all of it did. Batman and Green Lantern were the two that kind of escaped that, and those are where things start to get a little weird. Because some of their backstory can't have happened the way it did with the rest of the New 52 continuity being how it is.
Yeah. So. But Detective, this issue in particular, for me was a B. I think the whole story arc was a B+, a little better. I recommend you read it. Pretty good stuff.
Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I thought they did some cool stuff with this foe, with Tim, getting him back in, and how some of the group dynamics have changed and all of that. I'm going with an A- on this. I thought it was really good. If you haven't read this yet, you may want to pick it up when it comes in trade. I don't think you'll be disappointed. And like you said, it's an interesting kind of a bookend or follow-on of sorts or whatever, sequel-ish, to a Lonely Place of Dying from so long ago. So with that, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is Moon Knight number 188.
Kind of.
Well, yeah, I was... I was going to say, there are a couple of different titles I would have given this. Moon Knightless is one of them.
Moon Knight-ish.
Sunday is another one I would give this. The doctor at this at Ravencroft Asylum, which we've seen elsewhere, I'm pretty sure it's been used in the Spider-Man books over the years. Dr. Emmett, was she given a first name?
I don't think so.
And I think we've seen her in the previous volume or the previous volume. So she may have a full, given name or whatever, but it's hard to remember what that is.
Probably don't have to worry about it anymore.
I'm thinking we might. But whatever her full name is, this doctor, whoever, Emmett, is apparently the Marvel translation of Harley Quinn. Because this doctor, I don't know if she was setting out to create an opposite number enemy for Moon Knight or not, but man, she seems to have the recipe down. Let's take this nutcase who's got a similar-ish enough background. Let's feed him a little Egyptian mythology. Let's get him going on the full backstory on Moon Knight so he gets the idea of what to go ape and all of this. It's almost like a Hugo Strange kind of a plot to create a Batman villain.
Yes, she's obviously a little off herself trying these methods to quote unquote cure him with, but what she really wants to do is just make another Mark Spector. She's horrible.
Yeah. But it makes sense because clearly she misses Mark Spector, whom she had treated before. And I can understand that because he's nowhere to be found in this issue. And I'm not going to count the dream sequence she has, which I think was inserted solely so they could claim at least the image of Moon Knight appeared. But I mean, for a first issue of a new volume, yes, it's 188, but whatever. For Moon Knight to basically be on a splash page and in two panels, three maybe, of a dream sequence, it's like, come on. And I'll admit, I'm not the biggest fan of the whole Moon Knight the mental patient kind of approach on it, but I will admit, it has tons of story potential, some of which they've mined before, some of which they're doing an excellent job of mining here with this whole, hey, let's go create a villain for him. And this whole,
because he really never had... I mean, Bushmaster was the closest thing to his rogue gallery, you know, number one villain and his Joker. And he was really never that big of a villain for him. So it's nice for him to have someone who looks to be his equal or superior.
Well, I think part of it is because Moon Knight has had such a hard time maintaining a series, it's really hard to have that Rolodex of his rogues gallery at hand. But he has had one or two that started out, one that started out as a sidekick almost, a protege, and was pretty much an opposite number sort of a villain. It was a dark costume, but it had the cape, the cowl, looked a lot like him, that sort of a deal. He has had that Joker, Reverse Flash, you know, sort of Sinestro opposite number kind of a deal before. This one, I think, is gonna be a much more viable sort of a villain. But this almost, I think, would have worked much, much better in the previous volume versus taking a couple of months off and starting a new volume, because it really does seem to follow on with him having been in the asylum, Moon Knight that is, and all of that. I don't think this was a great way to launch a new Moon Knight volume. Cause I don't know, maybe I'm old fashioned or something, but I think the title character ought to be the star of the first issue of his new volume. I don't think that's asking too much.
Well, I mean, I think we're falling a little bit prey to the writing for the trade, and that's unfortunate. But I really like this creative team and this pairing. Max Bemis and Jason Burrows have both appeared together on Crossed over at Avatar. And Max did, I think, that last X-Men on Earth short miniseries recently. And Jason Burrows is tearing it up over on that Alan Moore Providence series, also at Avatar. His art is amazing. I love it. I love his art style. Max Bemis is more of an unknown property. He doesn't have a lot of unknown quantity. He doesn't have a lot of stuff out that's probably risen to that a lot of folks have read. So I don't know if people will come flocking for him. He's the lead singer of Say Anything, a pop punk band. So he's got that same kind of transition like Gerard Way does over at The Young Animal, kind of the lead singer to comic virtuoso type of claim. But I really like what he's laying down here, this foundation. It was a fascinating read. A really cool psychological thriller of an issue that didn't happen to have the title character in it.
Graceful way of saying saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. But it you know, if you don't look at the title, it's a really cool story, right? And it just doesn't have a lot of Moon Knight in there. Just in reference and the characters talking about the character, which kind of leaves you wanting more. I am, as you know, an avowed Moon Knight devotee, a big fan, special place in my heart for the character. So I like the character more than most. It's a B-list or sometimes C-list character that has gotten a little bit of resurgence lately with some of the top-notch creators that have been put on this title. I'm hoping this is the magic that brings more people into the tent. I'm not sure this title, this first issue is going to do that. But I think the writing is super strong. I think the art is beautiful. If you appreciate that while you're here, maybe you stay for a few issues to enjoy Moon Knight as he's introduced, hopefully soon, into his book.
Yeah, that's right. Come for Moon Knight, stay till he shows up. I mean, I get what you're saying, because, actually, I agree with a lot of that. I thought the writing here was exceptionally well done. The art was terrific. It was a really solid first issue in most regards, other than the title character not appearing at all. And not
except
being
in dream sequences.
So he wasn't there. His image was. He was imagined, but he wasn't present in this. We have no idea where Mark Spector is during this issue at all.
No.
And that's, to me, unfortunate.
Yeah.
But
now, if we're on issue 6 and we are still without Mark Spector, I can understand. I would be frustrated at that point.
If this had been another arc in the previous volume where he's just gotten out of the asylum or some such and, you know, okay, he's going to have his own adventure. And then we go to this where it's like it's just the next day at the office for her. Okay, that wouldn't have bothered me at all.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's been a couple of months. It's like, is this the same doctor we saw before? What was her name again? There were a few things like that that bothered me a little, but it was an exceptionally well done, story. It was very kind of disturbing how they were setting this character up, what he's doing. And it's not just that she's trying to create an opposite number, from Moon Knight, but this guy may have some powers. Matter of fact, it's not a may, he most certainly does. And I like how that was kind of introduced. It's like, the guy was a pyromaniac, but he was not in a position to set a fire. How did that fire start again? Oh, so they played fair, they set stuff up, and it felt like a very full issue. So it does have a lot going for it. It's something where I think, depending how long this arc goes, the first trade may be something that if Marvel can really kind of get it out there and get people hooked on the trade where they can get the thing in one sitting, they may then convert them onto the monthly title, but it feels like a little bit of a hard sell to tell somebody, you should check out this Moon Knight title. He's not in it at all yet, even though it is really good. And I do think it is worth reading.
And you get your standard legacy pages at the end. So just in case you forgot who this was supposed to be about, here's Moon Knight and here's where he comes from. So that at least is reintroduced for the new reader. But I'm not a real big fan of those legacy pages. They have different art team and they're pretty reductive with the characters. I haven't really cared much for those at all, but it is there for the new reader to give a little helping hand onto what they should be should be enjoying, but just the character wasn't in this.
So let's see. The legacy is celebrating this long history of these characters. And, oh, since you probably don't know who any of them are, we're going to tell you at the end of the story, here's a 3-page recap of their origin. Behind legacy is a little confused for me.
Why do they put these pages at the end? Why are they not the first thing you see?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. I don't know what they're for otherwise. If they're not to help on ramp the new reader, what are they there for? Why are we sticking them on the end? It makes no sense to me, but they are in here. And I really enjoyed this issue. I get it that it does have a weakness, not having Moon Knight in it much, if at all. And
hey, be thankful I'm claiming that's just a weakness, not a strength of the thing. If I'd been sitting here saying, it's really great because it doesn't have Moon Knight, then we'd have been okay. That'd have been bad.
And there are critics, I'm sure, that could say that aren't a fan of the character. I think this team is very strong together. I like the foundation they're laying down. This is a formidable foe. That I think this will be Moon Knight's Joker going forward. I have that feeling that this is he's going to have some staying power and be around for a while, and we won't have to rely on some of the weaker villains that have been introduced and trotted out. I really like this. Not a perfect issue, but really great for me. Loving it, so I'm going to give it an A-.
I can totally understand where you're coming from on that. I do think calling him Amon-Ra or whatever, little kind of crazy. You got Moon Knight, you should have Sun Day. It's that simple. Now, this is something where it is a strong start to the story, not so much a strong start to a new volume, but I do agree that this creative team is working really well together. They've created a very interesting character, and one that I agree is probably likely to stick around beyond just this arc, and could be one of the hallmark villains of Moon Knight's rogues gallery, such as it is. And I'm looking forward to that. This could be a really strong run for this title. They just need to kind of show us what their take's going to be on Moon Knight at some point.
Yes.
But I enjoyed it a lot. I'm going to go with a B+ on this. Do recommend it, and looking forward to where they go with it.
Definitely.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah.
Port of Earth number 1 from Image Comics. This is one that I was looking forward to. It seemed like an interesting concept. And there were a couple of quotes at the beginning. There's a lot of exposition at the beginning, but you kind of have to set up the concept. And it's okay, talking about aliens coming to Earth. And it almost seemed like the voiceover you would have at the beginning of a movie to a degree. They came not in peace or in violence, but in business with a proposition. Okay, interesting twist. We're going to have not the Ferengi, but, you know, a business approach versus we're coming to eat you or take you over, whatever. And it turns out that the twist here is their ships run on water. Our oceans offered fuel for their ships, a small amount, no consequence to us. I'm reading that and I'm like, really? No consequence to us? How small of an amount are we talking? It's a gallon or two. We got huge oceans. Okay, maybe I'll buy that. But if it's more than that, how many ships are coming? How much are they taking? Are we going to wind up with a desert planet at some point because they're stealing all our water just slowly?
It was interesting that it wasn't just a single race whose technology had water-based propulsion and technology, but it seemed like all of the alien races used that same technology.
This which consortium I thought of thousands of planets.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool concept.
But the minute I heard that no consequence at all, I'm like, I think I've heard that before in a Aliens Come to Earth movie or TV show.
Yeah.
That seems familiar.
Take all the water.
Then I flip to the 2-page splash where we see this base they've set up. And on the previous page, when they're setting it up with the dialogue, it's like, okay, it's 50 miles off the coast of California near San Francisco. I misread that. And for some reason, before I flip the page, I'm thinking, why would they build this thing 50 miles inland if they want water? And then I flipped it. Oh, I guess they put it out in the ocean. That makes a lot more sense. Okay, I just misread it. Fine, that's on me. But then there's this phrase of a page or two later that absolutely no interaction with human beings allowed, ever.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not rules. Suspicious.
There's rules.
Yeah, there's rules in it's we're coming, but you can't talk to us. Stay away from us, you lowly humans.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought, sure, you can come and take our water, but you can't. But we don't want you interacting with our people because they can't handle it. That's how I read it. I guess I read it differently.
I think it could go either way. I don't know whose rule it was. And it definitely puts a twist on it either way. Different twist, but yeah. There was also something about the spaceport that reminded me of Stargate Atlantis. It's a different design, but it's similar enough. And it's like, all right, fine. But it's not like the design of the base is of particular importance to the story.
Yeah. But I really like the momentum too of, okay, we build this base, they teach us and share their water technology with us. So that's awesome. That helps the whole world. That's a great thing. And only one ship uses it in like the first month or something. And then I think 7 in the next month and it kind of progresses until boom, there's one a day, several a day, and it just it's a packed port at that point, and it's being used all the time by all kinds of different. It's a really cool ramp up for this technology, and I thought that was a cool world they were building.
Well, I liked, again, like you said, the slow build up and stuff, but there was a part of it at this point where I'm thinking you've kind of blown through with this exposition a couple of potentially interesting story arcs. Meeting the aliens. Hey, we want to put a we've got a business proposition. Can we put a spaceport here? Well, can we interact? Can we not? You know, all that. That could have been and could still be an arc later on.
That's true. That's some fun stuff. It's just I wonder in today's environment if you have the time to slow build like that.
And that's a fair point. But the other thing that we get in, I don't know, first couple of 7-8 pages or whatever, was one of the big twists about the consortium. And again, I was already suspicious of them, so I knew something was up. And I don't want to necessarily give away what it was, but it's like, hey, that was an interesting twist, and kind of builds into the notion of they'd set up of the aliens to begin with. But that whole reveal could have been another arc. Now, to your point, do they have time for that kind of a slow build or not? Don't know. I think to then get to where they've established there's this police force and they've got to keep things safe, and then we essentially cut to almost a cop drama kind of a thing. And yeah. Not a bad one. It was fun. It was good.
Yeah.
But I think they could have set up that cop drama aspect initially or earlier on, had the murder mystery that we start to get going on as some of those other stories come to light.
Yeah, because there's almost this, you know, commerce over human life element. Well, there is, not almost. This consortium is allowing the occasional stray alien to, if they want to just kind of break the rules, go online, interact with the humans, poke them, prod them, kill them, you know, hunt them, whatever they want to do, they can kind of get away with, and we're not allowed to fight back because it might ruin the trade agreement.
We're allowed to fight back, just not kill them. So yeah. Two pages before we hit the staple, it's revealed that nearly one person is dead for every ship that's come to Earth.
Yeah.
And we have police force, but we've got to be non-lethal because, again, we don't want to, you know, cause an intergalactic war or whatever.
But our people die.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed to kill them back. that's kind of the rub, and it's like there's definitely the dollar is speaking a little louder than the human life that's being lost, and the consortium is kind of in the police force says, we'll take care of it, we'll investigate it, don't you worry, and that's kind of the driving force. And this is a fascinating world he's ramped up in a short amount of time, and I do agree that there's a lot of cool stories that were left on the cutting room floor that I hope we can get back to somehow down the road if this is a hit and takes off and is around long enough to, because I think there's tons of stories to be told in all that great fertile ground that you mentioned, just to get to this point. Really, really cool stuff.
Well, and it's also possible that when we start this interview on TV kind of a thing, again, before the middle of the book, that they're talking about how all of this seemed to have started when this network got unfettered access to what's going on at the port. And then we flip the page and we get the cops, the hover camera, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's conceivable that's a flashback at this point. I didn't take it that way initially.
True.
Still don't, but it could be that way. It's, there were one or two things about the storytelling that I felt could have been a little clearer.
Definitely.
And that they were very exposition heavy on the first, I don't know, 7-8 pages-ish, and had a really great idea that they almost breezed past too much of.
And yeah, there's an exchange between like a female administrator and one of the cops where she barely touches his shoulder or barely touches his arm, and he kind of freaks out.
Yeah.
You know, why would you do this? They're going to see us. Because the cameras are there filming this, and she says, well, do you care that they know about our relationship? And then he just kind of does a 180 and they start making out on camera. It was like a panel had shifted, and it was almost like a bipolar switch had been flicked. And I don't really understand that element there of that storytelling. That really was clunky. That part was clunky. There was some clunky conversation between the two partners.
Well, I thought that was really perplexing because, again, the guy who's like, hey, I don't want him to see that, and then making out with the girl or whatever, he's the one, it's like trying to, I don't say toe the company line, but
Yeah.
Put the viewers at ease while the other guy is like, yeah, we can take care of business. These things are easy to hack. I can make this weapon lethal if I need to, kind of. And
to what end? I mean, why is he doing that? I don't understand why he's being so cavalier, unless it's a good cop, bad cop situation that we're supposed to be reading into that.
I don't know. I would have thought before they managed to leave the station that one of the higher ups would have seen the live coverage, because I'm assuming it's live. Otherwise, you know, they'll edit that out kind of comments might have happened. And stop the guy from leaving. It's like, what the hell are you doing? You're going to scare people or, you know, cause an intergalactic incident or some such. There were a few things like that that I didn't totally get where they were going or why. But it was a fun read, and I'm really looking forward to more.
Yeah.
They set some cool stuff up, but they spent so much time with exposition at the beginning that it just kind of teases this stuff and doesn't get far enough into the story to fully satisfy me. But like I said, really, it was good.
I'm really rooting for your flashback theory. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense because we get exposition that it was.
We had an expedition through the exposition, I think.
We had an expedition through the exposition. But there, at one point, he does mention that it was when the cameras came that everything kind of went haywire. And then we are getting a flashback. I think I kind of glossed over that.
It was not clear.
That would allow maybe more of these stories to be told and go further back if we wanted to. But I got a feeling for a while we're going to be going forward from this with these cops. I really like the writer here. I think it's Zach Kaplan. He did Eclipse as well, which I think got through two arcs. And I'm not sure if he's put that on the shelf to do this or it's just on one of those monumental trade breaks that sometimes last 3 to 6 months. But it's about, you know, kind of a super powered sun that's made the world uninhabitable. So he's going in a hot world with no water to this world with lower water is kind of a big deal. So that was a very inventive story as well. A really good title. But I think he's still early on in his career. I think this is stronger. I think this is a stronger premise, and there's a lot of good stuff in here that's a little more of a grabber than kind of a subterranean story that's happening over an eclipse. So I'm a bigger fan of this. I liked a lot of the stuff that the groundwork that he laid here, and I'm excited to see what's next. And I do hope we get some of this world, a little more of that world building that kind of got glossed over in the exposition.
Yeah, this is fun. This is interesting. I want to see where it goes. How much of it is sci-fi? How much of it's police procedural? How much of it is almost like a politics sort of a thing? Whatever.
Which all can work. Yeah,
it could all work, and they could go in all those directions. It leans more towards police procedural, action adventure sort of a thing.
Yeah,
from where they're leaving off. I guess my main frustration was I thought they just kind of glossed over some very interesting ideas with the, oh, that's back matter, that's backstory, we're just, it's premise, just roll with it. And it's like, oh, that's actually, I'd like more about that. So I don't know if we're getting that or not, but I'm looking forward to what we do get more of and seeing where this goes. I think it's got a lot of potential. It was a fun read. I'm going to go with a B+ on this.
Yeah, that's where I was too. I'm at a B+. I'm excited for it and where it goes, and I'll be adding it onto the pull list.
Cool. So I got about 49 comics this past week, and I've read about 49 comics, so I'm pretty much even to where I was last time we talked. Had some other stuff going on that's eaten up a little bit of time, but I'm trying to keep chipping away at the reading and stuff. There's just so much coming out. It's a little crazy.
This will come out on the 20th, is that correct?
Correct.
So enjoy, have a happy Thanksgiving, and get your clips in. you don't have a lot of time.
Actually, the clips aren't going to be due until September or December 9th. So they should have plenty of time because the previews shouldn't come out until the 29th.
Yeah, I don't know how to read calendars.
Yeah, they're hard. They got all these numbers, all these boxes.
These weeks. Sometimes there's 5 weeks. Sometimes there's 5 Wednesdays. Sometimes there's 4. You never know.
This is why I actually have a calendar hanging on my wall here so I can look at these things and keep track of stuff. Because when we record, when it releases, when other things happen, it does get a little confusing. How that's how I sometimes mention, you know, oh, there's going to be a teleconference 3 days before you listen to this or whatever kind of a deal, you know, trying to get better at that.
Yeah.
But yeah, please send in clips. The preview spotlight deadline will be December 9th, because like I just said, the catalog previews is coming out on the November 29th. A lot of interesting stuff coming out from a number of publishers. We're going to have the comic page teleconference on December 16th. That's a Saturday, 7 p.m. Central Time. We just had the one this past weekend. Sam and I had a good chat and stuff. And if people are going to join the teleconference, great. If not, I can allocate the time to other stuff. Catching up on my comics. As it was, once I was done talking with Sam, I was just doing some stuff on my computer and whatnot. We're actually working on the number crunching for the October numbers. And nobody else showed. Which, you know, again, we're at the busy time of year. I get it. And nobody else had claimed they were going to show, so no harm, no foul. But it's one of those things. I'm doing this because people had expressed interest, and it's a question of, is the interest still there for the teleconference or not? And either way is fine by me. I think it's a fun way to have some interactive conversations, but I also get it's hard to commit the time and whatnot.
Yeah.
So this weekend, as we record it, is going to be, Wizard World Austin. So I will have, just done that by the time this episode goes up. So I should, have an episode coming out about that. Probably is the episode following this one, but gotta record it first, so we'll see what happens. That show over the years has, some years it's been awesome, other years, a little bit of a quiet show, I guess would be the way to phrase it. Don't know how it'll be this year, but always fun to do, because it's so damn convenient. and again, there have been some years they've had just some really great guests, and the lineup this year includes... three of the people from Firefly, Howard Hessman from WKRP in Cincinnati, that should be, and Clue for that matter, should be a lot of fun to hear what he has to say. A lot of celebrities and stuff. So that's always a little bit of a mix as to the personality of that show from year to year. They've done it sometimes on Halloween, so you get a lot more cosplay than you would get like maybe this year, but don't know. So, but between that coming up this weekend, Thanksgiving the next weekend, it'll probably be, little bit before the Mayo Report episodes go up, just I've got to find the time to coordinate with Sam and TJ. I think I've already got the times locked down. It'll just be probably near the end of this month, beginning of next month before those episodes come out. So, if you all have questions about the numbers, plenty of time to ask. Post on the forum, let us know. We're always happy to take the questions. So anything else? Does that do it?
That's an episode.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Super Sons number 10 from DC, Doctor Strange number 381 from Marvel, and Minky Woodcock, the girl who handcuffed Houdini number 1 from Titan Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.